From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on July 17, 1995, when Newsweek magazine published what has become an infamous cover story. The story was about bisexuality, and the cover photo included a group of people who looked, frankly, dark, threatening. I mean, to me, it looked like a publicity photo for a CW show about vampires. It was ridiculous. It was filled with warnings about the strangeness or the dangers of bisexuality. Here's one passage, quote, "Bisexuality is the wild card of our erotic life. Now it's coming out in the pop culture, in cyberspace, and on campus. But can you really have it both ways?" And then there was this passage, quote, "Bisexuality lurks as a rupture in the social structure, conjuring fears of promiscuity, secret lives, and instability. It can make the knotty issues of human relationships, jealousy, fidelity, finances, parental roles, custody, even more complex. And with these uncertainties comes an increased threat of AIDS," end quote. We're not done. Here's another passage from the Newsweek piece, quote, "Nobody knows how many bisexuals there are in the country or just how bisexuality should be defined. Its existence alone makes many people uncomfortable," end quote. 3 years earlier, in 1992, Time magazine had taken a shot at describing bisexuality. Here's a sample, quote, "In a world where sexual orientation is polarized into heterosexuality and homosexuality, bisexuality comes as a disturbing challenge, at once a riddle and a discomfort. Bisexuals often inspire nervousness, distaste, and hostility in both straights and gays and are all but ignored by scholars," end quote. And in 1989, Cosmopolitan magazine had told readers that men who claimed to be bisexual were not to be trusted. They warned female readers, quote, "If a man's eyes follow other men, be very cautious," end quote. Is it any wonder, then, that people who are bisexual have felt ostracized for years? In a recent piece for the New York Times, Danny Blum writes about the double closet. In this case, Blum refers to the kind of discrimination that bisexual people can face from those who are heterosexual and from people in the LGBTQ community. She writes that they can be discouraged from coming out due to biphobia. Research shows that the stigma has contributed to higher rates of depression and anxiety among bisexual people when compared to those who are straight or gay. This hour, our guests are talking about stigma, their own experiences, and frankly, an effort to end all of this stigma and some of the ridiculous stuff that I just read that I couldn't believe it was actually published. Shyander Coyns is one of our guests who's on the line with us. Shyander, welcome. Thank you for making time for the program. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. So when I was researching Chai, I came across all of those old articles, and I mean, I thought it was a joke at first, some of the things that were written, especially in the 90s. I suspect that's not a surprise to you.
Not at all. And I mean, you have to consider the times, how closed circuit everything was. It was like, if you were doing it, it needed to be behind closed doors. No one needed to know. No one needed to see. It was completely frowned upon. Not that things are a lot better now. It's a little bit more accepted for people of the LGBTQ community to kind of come out. But there's still this stigma and this idea that, oh, no, bisexuals are not the people to be around. Like, completely run away.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the New York Times story from just a few days ago talks about a still common experience that people who are bisexual have when it comes to coming out to family or friends. And I want to read from their piece, and I'm curious to know how common you think this is, Shyde. Quote, "When Brooke Lindley was 13 years old and first came out to her family as being attracted to both boys and girls, she didn't even know the term bisexual. It was 2003, and her parents responded dubiously. 'Just wait till you get a boyfriend,' she remembered her mother saying. A few years later, Ms. Lindley did get a boyfriend, but she found she was still also attracted to women. She would print bisexual fan fiction and read it at night, thinking to herself, 'This is totally me.' Still," she said, "her father told her, 'Nah, you're just confused.' High school friends who had come out to her as gay didn't believe her when she told them that she was bisexual, citing her past relationships with men. 'You've dated boys,' they told her," end quote. How common is this, Shai? This idea that someone who is either in adolescence, teenage years, an adult is, you know, working through this on their own, saying, you know, this is what I am. And you tell somebody and they go, nah, you know, you dated men. You can't be bisexual. How common is that?
Oh, it's very common. I would be shocked to see a person that is bisexual say that they haven't encountered that at any point in their lifetime. I just feel like people think that because you are interested in the same sex or the opposite sex, that once you go that opposite route, that they're going to do something to change your mind. They're going to instill something into you that has you come to the realization that, no, this isn't really what you want to do, or no, that was just hearsay, you're trying to follow a trend and things like that. When it's like, you know, you're trying to express yourself and say, no, this is me, this is my body, this is my mind, I know how I feel.
Why do you think there is this discomfort that even friends or family would have in accepting or affirming when someone is coming out as bisexual?
So similar to when someone is coming out as solely being gay and only liking people of the same sex, people kind of are drawn back. They're like, hold on, this isn't normal. This isn't what we're used to. And so to go another step further and say, hey, I don't just like the same sex, or I don't just like the opposite sex, I actually like both. It's like, you can't have your cake and eat it too. Like, you can't have the best of both worlds and then expect everyone to be okay with it. And then even further than that, you have to think about the different identities and personas that you take on when you are in these different types of relationships. And a lot of family and friends, they're stagnant on the image that they have of you currently. And so if you are currently dating someone of the opposite sex, and so as a female, you are more girly and you do more feminine things. Maybe you get your nails done. Maybe you get your hair done. But then you date someone of the same sex and that kind of switches up a little bit and you become a little bit more masculine and you start doing more quote-unquote masculine things. It's like, well, we're not used to that. That's not how we've come to know you. And so the change is not something that we're willing to accept yet. Mm-hmm. And it all falls back into those different personas and identities that you have in being a bisexual person.
But it's just my observation, Shai, that so if a friend came to me and it was a friend that I had known well and known for many years, and I, let's say I knew the friend as straight, right? And the friend came to me and said, I'm bisexual. If I were to say, no, you've dated, if it's a man, you've dated women for years, you can't be bi. If I do that, I'm making it about me, right?
Absolutely. And you're completely discrediting their experience and their feelings.
So if you don't mind, I'd like you to tell a little bit about your story, including the label that you choose to the extent that you use a label or terminology. I am curious about that. But if you could kind of go back and tell us your own story, we'd love to hear that.
Absolutely. So I identify as bisexual myself. And then I'm going to also let you know that I recently got married to my wife back in February. And so it's like,
congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. And people kind of step back at that and they're like, well, wait, how are you saying that you're bisexual, but you're married to a woman? Does that then stop any contact with men and all of any interaction that you have with men? And the answer is absolutely not. It's simply an attraction. So it doesn't mean that, oh, every time that I see a male, I want to engage in sexual relations with them, or I want to go as far as having an intimate relationship with them. It can simply mean, oh, I see this male, I identify that he is attractive to me. And then I go on about my business. And that's just kind of what it is that it's that for, I would say, all bisexuals. You can acknowledge an attraction and not move any further than simply that attraction. And so many people get caught up in the fact that, oh, well, if you're bisexual, then you're automatically jumping on every person that you see.
It's so strange.
And that's not true.
It's so strange.
Yeah, it's like literally you have preference in the people that you like. As a straight person, you would have different qualities and characteristics that you would look for in your female partner or your male partner if you're female. And in a same-sex relationship, you're also looking for different qualities and personalities that you're looking for in a person. Not every person of that gender or of that sex is an attraction to you. That's just simply not it. And so kind of throughout my own life, I've always kind of been like a tomboy. Like, I've always kind of dressed boyish, and I've always had like this cool laid back attitude, not really too engaged in like typical female things. I didn't really get my nails done that much, wasn't really interested in getting my hair done, things like that. I just kind of went on about my business. Now, at that time, I hadn't acknowledged to other people or really even myself that I was attracted to women. And similar to the young lady in the article, I didn't even really know that bisexual was a term that can be used to identify people. I was brought up on the term that a woman dates, marries a man, and that's pretty much it. So to even think about, oh, gay, lesbian, it's like, well, wait, I that's completely frowned upon. I don't know anything about that. And so then to realize that, hey, I like the same sex as well, kind of what do I do here while also still dating males? How do I go about this? And so for a while, I battled with myself about how I would even proceed with my life and my romantic relationships and moving forward with the people that I did choose to date. And so I kind of came up with the term jokingly, no label, so stable. And
hold on, let's do this again. Let's do no label, no label, so stable.
No label, so stable.
When did you come up with that term for yourself?
I want to say maybe 2014, 2015.
And tell us again why that feels like the right one for you.
So for me personally, I don't like being placed in a box. I don't like people telling me that because I identify as one way in any aspect of my life that I have to go about it in a specific way because this is the way that other people have known it to be. This is how they expect it to be. This is what they want it to be. I, as an individual, I do what I want. And so on the day that I wake up, however I'm feeling, that's what I go with. That term is also known as gender fluidity. And it's simply as I'm being myself. I'm not necessarily looking for the world to approve of anything that I'm doing or justify why I'm doing anything. It's like, if I did decide to get up and go to the nail salon and get my nails done, it's because I wanted to do that. If I wanted to go to the gym and play basketball with a few of my homeboys, it's because I chose to do that. There's not one particular stigma or standard that I'm just simply going to conform to because people want me to conform to it. I do it because that's what I want to do. And so I have no label, and I'm very stable with that. No one can really break that within me.
That's so good, by the way. No label's so stable. That's so good. Now, it's interesting. Like if you tell people, I'm bisexual, and I'm married to a woman, their response sometimes is, oh, so that just means you're gay. Oh, so you're a lesbian.
Exactly. Like, they'll either write that off as, oh, you're gay, or they were trying to, again, like I was saying, invalidate my experience. Mm-hmm. So in my history of life, there has been males that I've dated. And so it's not like I can just completely erase my past, nor can I not acknowledge the fact that sometimes males attract me. But again, I am married to a woman, and that's where people, they get weird and they get shaky, and that's where the boxes start to close in. And it's like, well, you can't do that. That's against the rules. And no, if you ask so-and-so, they'll tell you this. And if you ask this person, they'll tell you that. Well, the beauty of it is I'm not really looking for anyone to tell me anything. So I acknowledge who I am. I respect who I am. I talk to my wife about who I am. We have very open dialogue about our sexualities and what that looks like for us and what that means for us. And we're very healthy. We're growing, and we understand each other because there is no box around our relationships to tell us that, oh, you can't go this far, or you can only go this deep into whatever.
Yeah, I mean, at one point, I have a friend who's bi, and I joked at one point, she is dating a man, and she's in a serious relationship. And I said, you have this advantage. You know, you're bi, but you can date whoever you want, and men are the worst. So, you know, you should just date a woman. I was mostly kidding, mostly. And, you know, she laughed, and she said, you know, but we love who we love, and this is what works for me. And so, yeah, I mean... I wasn't actually trying to sway who she was dating, to be clear. I was more riffing on men. But it's strange because some people hear bisexual and they assume that you have to sort of constantly be interested in sexual partnerships with, you know, men and women or people across the spectrum, as opposed to just one person, one relationship, or even one marriage. It's very strange. And I wonder if this goes back to a lot of that media coverage that we highlighted at the outset of the show, which demonstrated this absolutely bizarre and awful, frankly, bigotry in those magazines. That's Newsweek magazine. That's Time magazine. I have to think that was a lot of work to sort of undo the public perception of that stuff. What do you think, Shai?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, I agree. And for so long, these things have been rooted into the people that read these articles and that subscribe to these monthly and weekly subscriptions. This is what they've been reading. This is what they've been engaged in. This is what they've been taught, and this is what they know. And so for there to be a whole nother world out there saying, well, wait a minute, there's quite a few of us, and this isn't something that's abnormal. It's actually very normal, and it's okay. People are freaking out because for 20, 30 years, I've been reading a magazine that has been telling me that this is not okay. People should not be doing this. We should completely run and hide from these people, get away from them. They're going to infect you, all of these things. And it's simply not true, but because media has portrayed it as such for so long, it's kind of hard to change the narrative, although it is changing around it.
I'm talking to Cheyandra Coins, who's telling her story as a person who is bisexual, or if you want to use the term that she uses for herself when it comes to gender and sexuality, no label so stable. And Shai's story, I think, is the story of, well, if you're wondering, you know, just how many people identify as bisexual, the New York Times says the number of people who identify as bi is rising in the United States from about 1% of adults back in 2008 to about 3% of adults in 2021, with more than half of the adult LGBT population identifying as bisexual, according to the most recent Gallup poll. But let's talk, Shai, about the LGBT community and bi, because one of the things that the New York Times piece touched on was that, yes, we are still a society that is dealing with that stigma that goes back decades, but we are also a society that has, you know, an issue in which people who are bisexual sometimes feel ostracized by the LGBTQ community. Have you seen that?
Absolutely. And it's kind of funny to think that as the LGBTQ plus community is so inclusive and we love everyone and we want to accept everyone, that we have this specific group that is included in that inclusivity that is being denied their validation of their feelings and their emotions and their attractions. So a lot of times you go to the family, you go to the close friends, things like that. They're kind of like, oh, you know, you'll get over it. This is a phase. This is a trend, things like that. And so people start sourcing out to social media. They start using different groups. There's a variety of LGBTQ groups that that is on Facebook, and specific lesbian groups, and specific gay groups, specific bi groups, and the list goes on. And so you go into these groups thinking that you're going to find community and people are going to uplift you and they're going to validate what you're feeling and all the things that you have going on. But then you get in these groups and you see that, again, because you don't fit into specific parameters of their definition of what you should look like, you are then targeted and ostracized because, again, you don't fit in these parameters. And to an extent, you don't belong. How could you say that you enjoy this and that when you're going off and doing three other things with the opposite sex, or and so on so forth? And so you look for the community outside of the people that's closest to you, only to be informed again that because you don't fit into their box and their definition, that you may not be as accepted as you're hoping to be.
And I'm sure, Shai, there are many, many people in the LGBTQ community who are accepting and loving. But what is your overall message to those in the community about the importance of meeting people where they are and not ostracizing and casting out, especially in the LGBTQ community?
The biggest thing is that we have to love and we have to be understanding and accepting. Everyone has their own way of going about life. Everyone is different. So you can't expect that because you have one belief or one expectation that someone's going to follow that to the T. You have to understand that someone else is on their own journey and they've taken their own path and they might be a little bit further or they might be a little bit behind you. And so you can't force what you've experienced and what you've done on them because that's what you know. You have to be open. You have to be accepting. You have to be willing to learn because, again, everyone is different. And you can't expect that because someone has similarities that they're exactly the same.
I think Shai is going to make this a national trend, the no label, so stable term. And this is going to be, we're helping with the launch pad here in this conversation. I thought that's so good. And her experience, I think, is so important as we understand this. A listener just sent an email asking, you know, do we even need this conversation? And one of the reasons we do, which we're going to talk about after our only break of the hour coming up here, is the mental health risks. Let me read this from the New York Times piece just recently on people who are bisexual and the mental health risks. Quote, a 2017 review of 52 studies found that when compared with heterosexual people, bisexual people had higher rates of depression and anxiety and higher or equivalent rates of those conditions when compared to those who identified as gay. A 2019 research brief from the Trevor Project, a national organization providing crisis intervention and suicide prevention services to LGBTQ people under 25, concluded something similar among America's youth. Bisexual high school students reported more feelings of sadness and hopelessness and more thoughts of suicide than those who identified as heterosexual or gay. End quote. That's why we're doing this. That's why we're having this conversation right now, and that's why we're all trying to learn and listen. So let's take our only break of the hour, and we're right back with Shai talking about mental health and what we all need to understand there, right here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on the next Connections, it's aliens! Finally, aliens in our atmosphere. Do you believe it? The Pentagon has been releasing videos that have been classified, and now people are wondering, even 60 Minutes did a report, could this be alien aircraft? Well, what does NASA say? Astrophysicist Adam Frank will join us. He says, still, sorry, probably not. But why? We'll talk UFOs Wednesday.
This is Veronica Volk from WXXI News, and we've got a new weekly podcast for you. It's called Earshot, and it's got all the most important, best told, sometimes off the beaten path news stories from your favorite WXXI and city reporters. Earshot comes out every Friday. Don't miss it. Subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.
This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let me read an email from Jen, who says, Evan, thank you for covering this topic. Bisexuality had such a negative connotation for me growing up that I avoided it. I didn't know how to identify without shame. The reclaimed term queer allowed me to identify and also was more inclusive than the dichotomous term bi. Queer is the no-labelist, stablest term in which I can now identify. Just wanted to share my thoughts and thanks. Thank you, Jen. I'm all the love to you, Jen, and I'm glad that there is a term that feels good and strong. And I'm curious to know, Shai, what do you make of Jen's email there?
I definitely love what she said. And as she did state, queer is coming back and taking back the name and definition of what it actually means. So kudos to you, and definitely continue strong with that and being yourself and saying your truth.
Thank you, Jen. And let me bring in Christopher Snyder, who's also on the line with us, talking about 2021. We're still seeing people who are who identify as bisexual with higher rates of depression, anxiety, higher or equivalent rates of suicide ideation than people who identify as straight or gay. And we're talking about undoing decades of damaging portrayals in media. It's gone back a long time. Christopher's with us now. Hi, Christopher. How are you?
How's it going? Good to be here.
Yeah, thank you for making the time. Can you tell us a little bit about your own story and your own thoughts about this?
Yeah. So it was a long process for me. So I actually grew up in a farm near Darien Lake, just about a 2 miles south of there. And so really, what it was growing up, I would think about it. Like, it wasn't really until I got out of college that I started really exploring that part of myself. And for a while, I kind of stuck with the term biromantic. And then this year was the first year where I kind of made that full turn and decided, I embraced the bisexual identity.
What was it about? Did something free you up and make you more comfortable in embracing it? How did you get there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, the dominant thing, I think, for me was the change in environment. I grew up in, a pretty, rural, conservative area, mm-hmm. where it just wasn't really something that was, encouraged. Like, I noticed I'm not necessarily alone in the sense that I looked at all my classmates who graduated, and when I was in high school, no one was out. But as soon as we all graduated, and, over the course of the few years after, we graduated in 2012, just to give some context, I noticed a lot of people, coming out, slowly over time, as we got, more into our own lives and, experienced different environments.
Yeah, I graduated from high school 15 years before you did, and I graduated in a district that had 300 graduates. It wasn't rural. It was a regular sort of a suburban district, and there was probably one person out on my graduation day. Now there's many. And, mm-hmm. And of course it makes sense, but it was you could say it was a different time, but it was partially a product of a time in which bigotry made it really, really hard. So for you, 2012, mm-hmm. but you're in a rural area. What is it like talking to, can you take me through what it's like talking to family, talking to, acquaintances, old friends, about what it means to be bisexual and their reactions to it?
Yeah. So the hard part is that, for most of the, people that made it hard. Let me put it this way. The people that made it difficult to come out don't know. So, like, I'm personally comfortable, like, with anyone knowing. But, like, I don't go out of my way to explicitly say, like, hey, I'm bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, it's something that's talked about mostly amongst the people that did come out. And it's, you know, we kind of form, like, a little bit of a circle of support, you know, amongst those people that kind of know. And the people that we would consider allies in that sense. But then again, like, it's still hard. It's something I describe as the ice. Not like the organization ice, but like the sensation of ice. Like, you go home and it's just this, this feeling that you can't be too different, or it attracts negative attention. And you sense it before you even say anything or do anything. You just sense this sense of, like, you know, I can't step out too far line or it's going to cause a negative reaction. Cause, like, when I was, you know, away from home, there was a situation where one of my family members and another person who I knew online got into an altercation that wasn't even related to sexuality. It was related to abortion rights. And me coming down on the side of, you know, pro-choice, pro-abortion, they actually decided, we're not going to talk to you anymore. Like, that family member just stops talking to me at that point.
Okay.
So it, like, kind of gives me the inclination of how, you know, if I would have that next conversation with them, how that would go.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you. I don't blame you for saying, yeah, this is not something I'm just going to advertise to people who have already made it difficult. I certainly get that. But among the people close to you, was there any resistance? Was there anybody who said to you, are you sure you're bi? Because, you know, if you dated women and, you know, was there any of that stuff?
Yeah, so I think this is the dominant feature of my experience, is that, no, I haven't experienced any pushback like that. And I think it is because of the work that has been done by people with the bi identity before me that have really carved out that space for me to just kind of walk into. I feel very fortunate in that sense. And not just that, but also the people that have done the work to create space for the LGBTQ community in general, or the queer community in general, for me to just kind of, you know, be able to explore that without the necessary feeling of being like, all right, you know, am I going to be in physical danger, you know, if I do this, that, or the other thing?
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that is so important to identify that the work that has been done for years has created some of this space and this opportunity. And sometimes it's generational. Sometimes that work, takes a long time to end up creating the kind of change that people want to create, but then it sort of happens and generationally things are changing. What about, you know, supportive and loving people in your life, Christopher, but people who are older, maybe parents or even grandparents, who might not have grown up even with this terminology or thinking about this? Any, you know, even hesitation there, or has it felt really supportive?
Yeah, you know, everyone I have talked to has been super supportive. I've never had a situation where I talked to someone and I've been like, oh, but, like, you know, it's only really with, like, a few peripheral family members that have, you know, I've just decided that that's just not going to come up unless I'm forced to.
Yep.
And the nice thing is, you know, like, with the pandemic, like, you know, we all kind of got a breather, you know, spend some time alone, really explore ourselves. And, you know, I feel like I know a lot of people who have, you know, come into more full and secure affirmation of their identities over the course of this time, where we kind of really had a time to introspect.
Yeah. So let me ask, can I ask both of you about the mental health aspects that I think are so vital to understanding why we're even having this conversation? So I'm going to read this again from the New York Times. I'm going to read this again, and I'm going to ask both of you about how you perceive this, you know, sort of for people who identify as bisexual in general, how concerned you are about this, and if you've ever had any of these sort of challenges yourself. So, quote from the New York Times, a 2017 review of 52 studies found that when compared with heterosexual people, bisexual people had higher rates of depression and anxiety and higher or equivalent rates of those conditions when compared with those who identify only as gay. A 2019 research brief from the Trevor Project, which is a national organization providing crisis intervention and suicide prevention services to LGBTQ people under the age of 25, concluded something similar among America's youth. Bisexual high school students reported more feelings of sadness and hopelessness and more thoughts of suicide than those who identify as either heterosexual or gay. Christopher, let me start with you. What do you make of that?
Yeah, so unfortunately, a little bit too familiar. I've dealt with depression and anxiety, not in an overly intense form, but a persistent form, if that makes sense. It does come from a sense of, you know, not necessarily having a firm identity, or at least not having an identity that, you know, you feel fully capable of embracing until you find the language. And the language is, the real hurdle. And once you have that identity, kind of getting it communicated out in a way that's true to you and makes sense to other people.
What do you think, Shindra?
I definitely believe it to be true, and I know it to be true, especially the anxiety and depression. Similar to what Christopher was saying, you have those like reoccurring feelings, and then you think about in your social settings when you're out with people and your friends don't necessarily know, so you don't want to do too much of one thing that might give you away. So like Christopher was saying, you're on ice, so, like you're tiptoeing around the people that you feel most closest to so that you don't break the ice, essentially, and have these people know the truth about you, and then go into even further possibly rejection, and you're not having that acceptance from them. So it's a constant battle, and also when people are questioning you, especially when you're at such a young age and you're still really getting to know yourself and what you like and what you don't like, when someone is continuously asking you, are you sure that you like the same sex, or are you sure that this is what you want? You start to question it yourself, and then you start to doubt yourself, and it creates all these emotions inside of you, and then you're depressed because you struggle with your own identity. I completely agree, and it's unfortunate, but it is true.
Mm-hmm. How are you doing today, Shai? How would you describe your mental health?
Right now, I am very stable. I feel great. I live and walk in my truth every day. I've come to a point where I'm like, if you can't accept me for who I am right now in the moment, then you're probably not going to be able to accept me when I decide to be a little bit different in whatever capacity that different may look like for me. I mean, I practice self-care daily. I believe that mental health is very important.
Do you feel, Shyandra, that simply the act of being loving and accepting can continue to save lives? I mean, that is not hyperbole, that it is saving lives if we are loving and accepting.
Oh, absolutely. If you just take a moment to just reach out and tell someone you love them and that you care for them, it can mean a world of change. And that's not just for someone who identifies as bisexual, lesbian, gay, anything. That's just someone in your life, just taking that time out to know that they are appreciated and that they are loved. It makes all of a world of a difference.
What do you think, Christopher?
Yeah, so like, I feel like we use the word virtue signaling in a very negative context.
Yeah.
But I'm going to provide a different perspective. If someone posts a pride flag on their Facebook profile, or if someone, affirms, queer identities in a way that's visible, and I see that, I'm like, okay, my world just got a little bit bigger. I know there's another person that I can at least talk to. like, you know, that makes the whole process, you know, of existing, you know what I mean, with an identity that's a little bit different that a lot of people might not understand, it makes that a whole lot easier. So in that sense, like something that I would describe as virtue signaling is actually a really good thing.
Well, and I'd like to ask you both then about the kind of public message that was sent recently, first in an interview with People magazine by Michaela Kennedy Cuomo. That's the youngest, she is the youngest daughter of Kerry Kennedy and Andrew Cuomo. And Michaela Kennedy Cuomo said that she told People magazine she wanted to celebrate Pride Month with a message to everyone, quote, on the whole spectrum of sexualities, as she opens up about her own bisexuality, and she wanted to share support for other members of the LGBTQ community. She said, quote, to those who are contending with the compulsive heterosexuality our society force feeds us, an innate attraction beyond heterosexual folks, please know that you are not alone. To the questioning folks, know that we all reserve the right to change our minds or evolve at any time. There is nothing wrong with you for not fitting into a limiting, socially constructed box. And she encouraged LGBTQ allies to be vocal in their support by speaking up against homophobia and by actively reaching out to the members of your community whose sexual expression may be isolating to them. That those are some of the words from the interview with People magazine that Michaela Kennedy Cuomo did. She's beyond that, I should say, she's 23 years old, and about a few weeks later, she clarified in a post on social media that she actually considers herself demisexual. And demisexual is a term that people might not know very well. It generally refers to a person who is only sexually attracted to someone if they have an intense emotional bond. And she thinks of herself as queer and as demisexual. And she said that in her social circle, it's not cool to be hetero, which was when you think about, you know, Christopher, for example, when I was thinking about my own high school graduating class, only one out person out of 304 people, you think about what it was like in 2012. Does it surprise you to hear the governor's daughter say in her social circle, it's not cool to be hetero? What do you think, Christopher?
Oh, you know, that doesn't surprise me at all. So I had a very night and day transplant where I went directly from, rather rural high school directly to RIT, where there was a large out and proud community, that kind of incubated, the ability to explore yourself in the way that you wanted to. But I know that there's a lot of areas that fall in between, you know, a lot of areas where, you know, it's like, oh yeah, you know, it's fine if you're that way, but as long as you don't talk about it too much. And I can very easily kind of imagine what that environment must be for her. But that being said, like, it does sound like, you know, she's really, you know, used her position, to really reach out and, you know, create space for people. And I appreciate that.
What do you think, Shai?
I'm not shocked by it at all. Like you said, it's 2021. People are becoming more accepting and are more out. I feel as though, kind of with that though, we have to be careful to not completely exclude heterosexual people, because again, just as much as we want to be included and supported and loved, we also need these people to be our allies. And so, like Christopher was saying, seeing a post on social media saying, hey, I'm an ally, hey, I support, I've done this, this, and this to support those people, we have to also appreciate and respect in their manner and their sexuality and their beliefs, and not just isolate and work so hard to reverse the progress that we're making within ourselves.
Absolutely. And I think with that, we have to also be allies. And especially for, you know, the trans community, I don't know the number in my head, but, you know, there's so many people of the trans identity that have been victims of crime, victims of violence. I know them in my personal life, and it's just been absolutely terrible. And I think that, you know, if you are anywhere on the, you know, the LGBTQ, I like the term the rainbow or the alphabet mafia. And if you're anywhere in there, you have to be an absolute ally in that respect. And also, if you're just, you know, a human being, you should absolutely stand up for what's going on, because, you know, trans people have been facing this for way too long. Hmm.
I just got an email that I'd like to read, and I told Barb to call the show. She will in just a second here, but let me go ahead and read this, because this is from Reverend Barbara Adams, who's been on this program. She and Roz, who've been on, they're celebrating their 25th anniversary today. So Reverend Adams and Roz, happy 25th anniversary. Let me read her email. She says, Evan, wish I could join the conversation. If you are comfortable sharing, I offer affirmative spiritual counseling to the LGBTQ plus community. No damnation, no sinning, no guilt, purely love as we are. Remember, I'm a recovering Catholic and a woman who lived half of my life in the closet. I'm out now, and I have never been happier. And she says, if we'd be willing to share her website, we'd be happy to. Sure, we'd be happy to do that. It's peaceandharmonyministry.org. Peaceandharmonyministry.org. Barb says, love and peace for everyone. So again, happy anniversary, Reverend Adams. And let me just ask our guests, when you think about sort of, when you think about religion, Shai, do you think of it as a monolith, or do you think, you know, it slowly there are people of faith and leaders of faith like Reverend Adams who are accepting and loving, and that's happening a little bit more and more, or do you have a different view of it?
Religion and I have a pretty sticky situation going on.
You can be real with us. That's okay.
I mean, it's evolving, maybe not as progressively as it should be. But there are people like the Reverend that is out there and is kind of showing up and being there for the people. Those people I do support. I love what they do, and kudos to them. Personally, I did grow up in a Christian home. I did follow the rituals and routines. I went to church every Sunday, X, Y, and Z. And I've come to find myself on more of a spiritualist path than a religious path. And I feel like that's just personally more suiting for me.
Yep. I got you. Christopher, some brief thoughts from you on that. Go ahead.
Absolutely. So I am also a recovering Catholic. Mm. And I remember growing up and, you know, just sitting in church and, you know, listening to a pastor say, you know, unequivocally, you know, anyone who's LGBTQ is a servant of the devil. Like, like, and just like, you know, and having that not even be the main point, that's just like, you know, one of several points he's making, you know, and that's kind of like the message that I got growing up. So like, you know, it's a lot of recovery from messages like that. And, you know, I think at the same time, yeah, like, you know, it did cause me, or at least was part of the cause for me to break away from religion entirely when I was in high school. But then I've slowly found my way back in form of a, you know, as they said, a spiritual path. And, you know, that's been remarkably valuable for me, and it fills my cup in my own personal way.
About 45 seconds apiece. Let me just ask for some final thoughts that you want to leave with listeners as we, I think we all try to do a better job listening and understanding and being loving people. It's been many decades of damaging portrayals of people who are bisexual. Cheyenne Coins, what do you want to leave with listeners?
Everyone, just remember to love each other, give each other a hug, tell each other that you love them. Seek out mental health, therapy, counseling, everything, not just because of your sexuality or your preferences, but simply because it's the greatest thing to do, and it keeps you healthy, it keeps you sane, and peace and love to everyone.
Great stuff. Christopher?
So I have a poem I wrote on this to help maybe reach anyone who's on this particular way.
Gotcha. We got about 1 minute. Go ahead.
All right, go ahead. All right. Queer in the country. Those long roads stretch out for you. Those stars shine for your eyes just the same. Love worked in the world before you came along. And the love in you works.
Thank you. I'm grateful that you're willing to share that, Christopher. And I know, we tried to put together a conversation, I think, that was open and just understanding. Mm-hmm. And I know it's not always easy to sort of talk publicly about stuff, given how judgmental some people in our lives can be. So let me just thank both of you for being willing to do that and for making time for the program. Christopher, thank you very much. It's nice talking to you on this program.
Yeah.
And Shyandra Cohen, same. Thank you for making time and certainly best of luck in your future. Thank you for being with us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Shy and Christopher and everyone else, all the love. Hope everyone is surrounded by loving people today. Rob Braden is the engineer of Connections. Megan Max, the producer, Emma Ray Stein, production assistant, Reese Dawson, production assistant. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. We're back with you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.